Grade 7 Conference, Lecture 62, Physiology, Part 1. Now, physiology is a very interesting block. I hardly know two teachers who've taught it the same way. And it's because Steiner left it quite open-ended in certain respects. It was concerned with health and hygiene. So one can teach it completely from that aspect. So it has to do then with how one eats and gets enough sleep and care of one's skin and what else. And, finally, that could go all the way also to sex education, which many teachers feel is a very important aspect of what we're doing and should not have to wait till the high school years. And then there's another aspect of it, which is really teaching the children physiology. Certainly one could do both, but generally the emphasis is going to be one way or the other. And I will acknowledge that my emphasis was always more on the second path, working with physiology as a continuation of the natural sciences. So we had zoology, botany, mineralogy, astronomy might have come last year, it might be coming this year for you, and physiology belongs in that stream. And it also, of course, is so beautifully integrated then with our study of the Renaissance. As I mentioned, Leonardo almost got himself in major trouble by illegally dissecting corpses, and Michelangelo was able to get pretty unprecedented permission to be able to exhume corpses from a local cemetery and work with them. So what a natural path then to go into the foundational picture of the human being. And students, of course, again, if they go on to the Waldorf High School, will have this all on a deeper, more conventionally scientific level, which means then, and here's another aspect of the challenge, you have a degree of freedom in how you're going to bring this. And for many of us, and I would include myself there, that means that we're probably going to bring the children in one way or another, even if we never use the expression, the threefold human being, say something about the threefoldness of the human being. And it's important for us to recognize that you can search wherever you want in the medical literature and Google it or whatever, you are not going to find a picture of the three systems of the human being, nerve senses, rhythmical, and metabolic limb. You're not going to find that anywhere in any scientific literature. There might be here and there a hint of it or something that you can take as fodder for your ammunition, but it really is absolutely purely anthroposophical. This is Rudolf Steiner's picture of the human being. And I say this, it's kind of obvious, and yet it's amazing that it really isn't for many, that one has to take great caution when you are teaching an entire block out of Steiner's world picture, and perhaps ignoring or remaining ignorant of a lot of modern scientific approaches to the same subject. So this is a very tricky one, and this is where critics of Waldorf education, Dan Dugan among them, but not exclusively so, there are physicians, there are scientists, there are a regular cottage industry of websites out there, critical of particularly 7th and 8th grade pseudoscience, as they call it, and they point to our teaching of the threefold human being as pure anthroposophy. How can we deny that we're working out of anthroposophy? Where else do you get those ideas? And I'd have to say that they are completely right. Now, the problem is that for many class teachers, not being of a scientific cast of mind, and yet wanting to teach this science block, and I think that's correct and admirable, it may be that they never really thought much about the heart in all their years, in secondary school, in college, in graduate school. They were really never exposed to very much information about the heart. So Steiner's picture of the heart and the famous statement, "The heart is not a pump," is something that many teachers accept because they have no other picture to counter it. They've never studied all of the reasons that the heart is said to be a pump. So, well, Steiner knew what he was talking about. If he says it's not, it's not. And there are a lot of other areas like this. So I just urge you to go as deeply as you can, to not just stick with Steiner's pictures or the pictures of those completely influenced and inspired by Steiner, but try to get something of a broader picture. And it might be that you would want to say that, you know, there are two ways of looking at the heart. One of them is to imagine it pumping the blood with its muscular force. And you can talk perhaps about Harvey's discovery of the circulation of the blood, though that goes beyond the Renaissance. Interestingly, at the time of the Renaissance, the belief was not in a circulatory system at all. So to give a broader background to what you are bringing, otherwise, without knowing it, without meaning to, you're just going to be perpetuating not even what Steiner had to say, because in his lectures to doctors in particular, he shows a tremendous penetration of the medical information of his time, but it will be in a way what's become popularized or what's been passed down in your school in the way that teachers have been doing this for many years. So try to give the child both pictures as best you can. This is a time when, if you can, it might be good to bring in a physician or a biologist, if you have one in the parent body, who is sympathetic to the school, who's not just going to give the children a purely materialistic and purely non-anthroposophical picture of the human body, but at least who can speak out of knowledge and is someone who's really well informed. And perhaps this summer you could even go over some of your ideas with such a person and get a little bit of feedback from them, how you're going to present the human being. So I bring all of this just in the way of not only caution, that we don't want to look like we're an anthroposophical parochial school. I think we do so much nowadays that is so totally non-anthroposophical. There's no danger of that, really. But just that I have noticed that this is one of the areas where teachers are all too willing to read a book or two written by a Waldorf teacher, to talk to their mentor, to kind of somewhat passively accept the way others have taught this subject. And think about it, it's the first time that you are going within the physical body. In many schools, by third or fourth grade, children may be doing some dissection. We wait so very long to do that. We wait until the astral body is to some extent a bit anchored within. And then it's a genuine experience. Then the students are really waiting to understand something about themselves inwardly. So I think it's the right time, but I think it's also important that we try to bring some new currents to it and find ways to take up what's being brought in the world. And here I would have to say, as I've said more than once before, there are resources, particularly online, which are able to give a vivid picture of the human organism, for you as a teacher anyway. And it would be good to avail yourself of some of that and in that way get a good picture before you begin to bring it to the students. I would also urge you to look at the small but I think very helpful slideshow of student work concerning this physiology block. As was the case in so much of what I did not give them a tremendous amount of content. We focused on a few aspects of the three systems. Yes, I did teach them, but not necessarily in a completely schematic and separated way. I hope that the way I brought these things would allow something to sort of rise out of the students themselves. And we will be talking in the next lectures how one can speak about the sensory system, how one can bring the rhythmic circulatory system, and how one can bring the metabolic system to children. We're not going to go into great depth. We don't have to. They'll get that later on. But we also don't want to just make it a very superficial, cursory look at these things. And we also want to be sure that we are responsive to their interests and to their questions as well. We began, by way of a preface, by having a conversation in the class in which everybody sat very still. We made sure the room was quiet, or you might have to go off somewhere away from the ambient noise of a school, to a very quiet place, and just to say, what are you aware of? Now, we did this the year before in sixth grade when it came to acoustics and light, when we tried to be aware of what we heard or what we saw. So it was a little bit of a recapitulation of that, but taking it still further. And what came out of it after some conversation following that silent period was they were very aware, keenly aware, as they had been the year before, of sounds, of things that they were hearing. Even though it was supposed to be quiet, they were very aware of the sounds that were all around them. They were aware of what they were looking at, of what they were seeing. And so that was all outward impression. And then I said, and what about inwardly? What are you aware of? What? And one said, it was so quiet I could hear my heart beating. Oh, yeah. I felt that way too. So were you aware that you were breathing? Yeah, I could hear other people breathing. And I guess that made me breathe more deeply. So secondarily, after the sensory awareness, there's a different kind of awareness which can come and go, and usually goes, we're usually not terribly awake to it, of our heartbeat, of our breathing. Our breathing is more obvious to us, heartbeat less so. But we know at any moment, we only need touch ourselves in any number of places on our body, and we will be able to experience our heartbeat. And then, of course, you could always count on this when dealing with seventh graders. One said, I was aware I was hungry. Is it snack time yet? I'm hungry. Okay. Isn't it interesting that your awareness of your hunger is not something that makes you smile, does it? You know, some of you had beautiful sensory experiences. They didn't bother you at all. They were fine. you became aware of your heart and breathing, and no one said to me how exciting. It was sort of a neutral experience. But when you became aware of what's going on in your stomach, at least, and maybe more deeply than that, it's a little bit uncomfortable. There's a need there that's got to be satisfied, so that finally you're not aware that you're hungry anymore. You're satiated, you're satisfied. And with that, then, you're going to forget that you were hungry. You're not going to be thinking for the next hour or two. Well, maybe some of you will, but most of you won't. Oh, that was great. Oh, I'm so glad I ate. Oh, I was so hungry. Oh, no, it goes away and we let it be. In fact, the only time that we are really wide awake to what's going on below the level of our heart and lungs is when we have a stomach ache, when our appendix is inflamed, when we have gastroenteritis or something like that. Then we're aware, and it is usually extremely painful. Some of the worst pain that we can experience in our bodies is what happens when we suddenly are awake to our metabolic system, as it's called, which is a very vast complex of things. So what we did in this discussion was actually, though I never use the word, we were experiencing the differences in consciousness that we experience throughout our body. And indeed, we could say, without pushing it, without, you know, using it like a Procrustes bed and forcing people into it, we could say that we're very awake in our senses. It's very easy for us to comment on what we're seeing, hearing, smelling. It's all right there, right on the surface. We're out there in the world. We can easily experience our breathing and heartbeat as well, though we have to make a little bit of effort to do that. And as soon as we do, it gets a little funny. Our breathing, oh, I better take a deep breath, or our heart starts to skip a beat or something like that, or it at least begins to race when we are aware that we are experiencing it. But we are really asleep almost all the time to our metabolic system, except when we become uncomfortable, when we need to take something in, as in eating, when we need to release something, as in excretion. It's always a little bit of an uncomfortable experience for us, and that's the kind of rousing from deep sleep. You know, it's like somebody shaking you, wake up, wake up, no, leave me alone, get away from here, leave me, I don't want to go back to sleep. It's as though our metabolic system really objects to having to wake up, and it makes us pay the price. So we'll go on then and look at how this difference between wakefulness and kind of dreaminess and sleepiness, how we can understand the functions of different parts of our body, and how, just like we ourselves, they retain a flow. They're all parts of the same body, but they are asleep in a halfway state between sleep and wakefulness, and then very awake, just as in the course of a day and night. We go through those states as well. Perhaps you've already looked at the Medici tombs of Michelangelo, and you've pointed out the four statues of dusk and dawn and day and night. And maybe Michelangelo was pointing to something there, having to do not only with times of day, but having to do with consciousness as well.